This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Salvaraj. Now, the recently released Social Prosperity Vision 2030 has identified a crime prevention index as one of the 8 social indicators of a progressive Malaysia. So what actually goes into a crime prevention index, and how does the index contribute to creating safer spaces for us to live and thrive in? Today, we're going to be answering that question as we speak to Rajiv Richakaran, the Adun for Bukit Gasing, who returns for his monthly show with us. And we are joined by Shamir Rajadure, a crime prevention specialist. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you very much for having us.
So, Shamir, the government has mentioned in its document that it's coming up with a crime prevention index. Correct me if I'm wrong. Shouldn't it be a crime index? Is that just semantics?
I think one thing is a lot of people have been confused about this. Even I don't know what this is yet. We've tried to ask around and nobody seems to know what this is. We are very used to a crime index.
Right.
Crime prevention index, something new. We've not heard of it yet. But I'm going to make an assumption. It's going to be based on the crime prevention strategies which are going to be put in place with SPV 2030, and maybe they're going to evaluate it from there.
Okay, so we'll talk about those strategies in a little bit. Let's, for the sake of a clean discussion, stick to the fact that let's look at a crime index then, right? And we do have some numbers for that, because I looked through the Department of Statistics website, which is fascinating, and saw that last year, for the first year, they published Crime Statistics Malaysia 2018. Now, the crime index ratio per 100,000 population in Malaysia improved to 309.7 in 2017 versus 355 or 352.2 in 2016. What do these numbers mean?
I think one thing which is good is if we see a reduction in these numbers from 355.2 to 309.7, it's a good improvement. But I think what's important for people to realize as well is that as much as these numbers have dropped, crime is still high. But there has been a reduction over the years. I'm just going to break into the statistics a bit more. Instead of talking about every 100,000 population, let's look at daily how many cases are reported. And
wait,
I have to specify
hang on.
Reported.
Before you get into that, could you help us explain, what does this mean? What is 309.7 versus 100,000 population?
Which means for every 100,000 people, 309.7 people have been victims.
Really?
No, right. So this is like equal weightage to all kinds of crimes? Snatch thieves, to house breaking ins?
Only to index crime, which basically breaks down to about 8 different types of crime.
Okay, well, then
so it does not include the other crimes outside the 8?
It does not include drugs. It does not include commercial crime. It does not include
So maybe just
cyber.
For the rest of us who are not familiar with this index, what would be these 8 crimes that are tracked from this index?
So basically, it breaks to 2. Okay. There is violent crime and property crime.
Right.
Violent crime comes to rape, murder, mugging, or physically hurting a person.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas property crime includes theft, vehicle theft, snatch theft, and home break-ins.
Okay.
So would these be like the 8 most common crimes
Actually the 8 most common crime indexes which are used in various countries as well. So we are adhering to a certain standard. But of course...
So this helps us to compare crime apple to apple with another country.
Let's get into the details of that in a little bit. You wanted to share some statistics with us about how to understand these numbers a little bit better in terms of a daily occurrence.
A daily occurrence. So when we look back, let's start from 2015. We have daily approximately 316 cases reported daily.
Wait, 316 cases?
Daily. Okay. This includes Sabah, Sarawak. And then we've 2016, it dropped to 308 cases daily.
Okay.
2017, 272.
Okay.
And last year, we had 242 cases reported daily.
Wait, so are you telling me 242 cases all across Malaysia daily?
Okay, daily. But again, I very heavily stressed reported.
We're also going to get into that later. Yes.
So it's good that we see a reduction.
Okay.
So this is what it's like. So daily, we have 242 people becoming victims. That's not a good number to say.
No, no, I don't even want this.
So let's have some perspective on that number. Okay. What's it like in other countries?
It would really depend.
Let's take a good example, a medium example, and maybe a not so good example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just take Singapore. The numbers are much lower there.
Of course, that should much be like the, that should be like the best example.
The best, but again, neighboring country. But of course, certain policies are easier to implement there compared to here. Mm. But when we compare it to maybe Philippines, the numbers are much higher.
Right.
Much higher. They are probably double or close to triple of our numbers. So in comparison, we are, I'm not going to say we are good. It's still crime. It's still crime at the end of the day. But it's not as bad as the other Southeast Asian countries within our region.
We're probably in the middle then.
You're probably in the middle.
Okay.
So Singapore is
Singapore is top. Yeah, top.
Gold standard.
Gold standard.
Okay, so, you know, besides, you know, flinging these numbers around in a press conference or, you know, having, you know, newspaper articles come out, what do you actually use a crime index for?
Well, the police uses it mainly for analysis and all. They've got this crime mapping system, a GIS system, which shows them exactly what crime is happening where, which allows them then to implement certain strategies in certain hotspots.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get into the details of all of that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to take a short break at this point. I'm speaking to Rajiv Rishakaran, Assemblyperson for Bukit Gasing, and Shamir Rajadure, a crime prevention specialist, about the proposed crime prevention index under the newly launched Shared Prosperity Vision 2030. If you have any questions on this topic, please do feel free to tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-888. Or you can call in at 0377332900. The gentleman will be more than happy to take your questions. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Rajiv Rishakaran, Assemblyperson for Bukit Gasing, is here for his monthly show. And in the studio with us is Shamir Rajadure, a crime prevention specialist. The topic of the day is crime. What to do about it, and later on, how we can try and avoid being victims of it. To join the conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call in at 03-7733-2900. Earlier at the beginning of the show, Rajiv, you asked Shamir about what are the kind of factors or the different variables that are within the crime index. Perhaps you could break that down for us now, Shamir.
Okay, so let's break it down. Even when we talk about violent crime, so we've got rape, and then we've got murder. When it comes to mugging, there's even a bigger breakdown. You've got mugging with weapon, without weapon. Mm-hmm. And then you've got mugging as an individual or as a group.
Okay.
And as an individual with weapon or as an individual without weapon. So, and you have mugging with firearms.
Okay.
So there's that whole breakdown over there. So that's good also for us to understand what are the modus operandi of these criminals.
Okay.
We understand, do they move around with a parang mo? Do they move around solo or as a group? So that's the good thing about it. And of course, when we talk about vehicle theft, there's a breakdown as well when it comes to property crime. There is car theft, motorcycle theft, and theft of vans and lorries and all.
Okay, so at the break, Rajiv was asking a very interesting question. Could you repeat it, please, Rajiv? I really want to know the answer to it. I remember you asked, what happens if somebody, you know, breaks into your car to steal drugs? I thought that was fascinating. So how do you know what kind of a crime that is?
Well, it would depend also on mainly what is the based on the discretion of the officer.
Right.
If he catches him at that point for breaking entry, he's going to charge him with breaking entry.
Right.
But if he finds drugs on him, if he feels that he is a pusher instead of a user, then he pushes it to the narcotics department.
Okay, and speaking of which, there is a narcotics crime index as well. Mm. There is a commercial crime index. Perhaps you can just break these two down.
Okay, when we look at narcotics crime as well, I'll say this. Drugs in Malaysia, 74%, between 70 to 74% is meth, shabu, ice. This is the main drugs which you do. So this index shows us exactly what type of drugs, what is the usage, what is the amount, to say, in terms of ringgit value.
Yes.
Same with commercial crime. You've got, CBD, criminal breach of trust. You've got fake
this
money.
This is all white-collar crime.
White-collar crime. But you'd be very interested to know the numbers for commercial crime.
Please share.
Are ridiculous. So, in terms of ringgit value, from January to October last year, not even the whole year, just January to October last year, the amount which was lost, 4.2 billion ringgit.
I think I have a pretty good idea where that figure comes from.
Maybe half of it, most of us have an idea where, but the other half, every year it touches above 1.5 billion ringgit. So that's how bad commercial crime is.
And there's also something called a non-crime index. I don't understand this one.
Oh, well, things which don't fall under this, for example, cybercrime, cyberbullying, arson, are these kind of things which are not normally in the crime index itself.
Okay.
Falls under this category.
All right. We haven't talked about domestic violence yet. Where does that fall in?
Okay. So that would probably fall under non-index crime as well.
Non-index. Mm. Okay. Yep. All right. So you've mentioned so many different factors and variables to the crime indexes. Is there anything that's lacking?
Oh, yes. I think arson and bullying, especially like road bullying, you know, should be part of that index.
Okay.
It's not at the moment. In certain countries, arson is, but in Malaysia, it's not.
Okay. So you alluded to this, the next question that I'm going to ask you right at the very beginning of the interview, right? We've heard from police officials, very senior police officials that although the crime rate is declining, the public's perception towards crime hasn't changed. Do you have any insights to
us? Yes. Okay. There are a few reasons. The first would be the crime that creates fear of crime. So you've got different types of crime. Crime that creates fear of crime goes viral very fast. Mm-hmm. And that creates a panic. And I think that's what the police actually wants to reduce. Mm. So that gives us the perception that crime rates are way higher than what it actually is. So crime that creates fear of crime, for example, would be muggings or murder. Mm-hmm. You know, it creates that trauma in comparison to car theft or motorcycle theft where you don't see it or it's non-violent. So these are the kind of crimes that actually create that fear. And it gives a different perception towards it. So because the minute it happens, you know, it's on YouTube, it's on WhatsApp, it's on Facebook, it goes viral. Everyone's like, oh, be careful now, you know. And then the second would be that people probably do not have or they have not built that confidence with the PDRM to make this report. Or certain things probably you don't even need to make a report, so you don't. Maybe you've been a victim of snatch theft, but you've not really lost anything. Maybe you did not bring your wallet, you're just cash in there. No point making a police report.
You know? Why did you say there's no point? Because should you not make a police report?
I think you should.
Oh, no. Should correct that. Yeah. You should make a police report no matter how small the crime is.
That's true. I agree.
But there are many people out there who feel that it's too much hassle or there's no point making a report or they just, for whatever other reason, don't make the report.
So it takes time to make a report. That's the thing.
But what that does then is it skews the numbers.
Correct. But I think
But this is not a phenomenon today. I mean, people not making reports is from the beginning of time.
Yes, right.
From the beginning of time that police reports existed. So it'd be interesting if someone tracked the percentage of crime that has not been reported over the years. Mm. But that's not tracked. So anecdotally, I would say that ever since I've gotten involved in public life, I would say it's maybe more or less the same 10 years ago. Till today, then.
Okay, so that's anecdotally. Shamir, do we have any figures as to discrepancy between reported crime and recorded crime?
Well, there's no real figures to that. But also, just going back to the other question, why do you normally think that people, you know, the numbers are declining? Mm. Also, it's because of there's this big difference between the perception and reality of crime. You know, for example, people, you know, when they live in neighborhoods which have maybe a lot of foreigners, they get scared. But foreigners only contribute to 2% of crime in Malaysia. The other 98% is us. You know, when you drive by, suddenly you see an Indian guy, do you lock your car doors, you know? Mm-hmm. It's that perception of society, perception of crime in Malaysia. Mm. And that's probably one of the...
I've seen people lock their doors when I walk by, so, you know.
I get it all the time, don't worry. I get stopped at police roadblocks all the time. But it's fine. But of course, there's a big discrepancy. I'm sure even those who are listening now are probably thinking, oh yeah, you know, I became a victim once and I did not even make a report. I'm sure there are listeners out there who have had that experience. But it's also mainly due to the fact, I think, that one, it's quite a long process to make a police report. It takes time. You go there, you wait, you type in the report. Easily, it takes 20 minutes.
Have you seen examples, perhaps in other countries, where the whole process can be simplified?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I've travelled a little bit, been in different agencies, but not to my knowledge.
Okay. Mm. All right. So, if is it just reporting then? How do you address that gap? If we are saying that what we need to do is really increase the numbers when it comes to recorded crime.
Yes.
Because that will then reflect in reported crime. Yeah. How do we close the gap?
Well, I think the one, I think the system really needs to speed up. We have to have a way to make reports faster. I understand there are certain legalities behind it. That's why you cannot really make a report online. If not, you're going to get a lot of fake reports as well. There should be a way to speed it up, and I think the police should look into it. But I think what's really important is for the police to be more open. They are a bit open, but I think they can work better with external agencies.
How would you suggest they be more open?
Okay, maybe first, you could give an example. I think they need to stop making everything so late. Everything is too late. You know? Even when we want certain data, it's so difficult to get. I remember whenever I contact agencies overseas, and it's so much faster for me to get data from overseas when I'm not even a citizen in that country.
What do you think the fear is?
I think this is the fear, that people are going to say, oh, there are 200 over cases a day. Let's all be careful. The police are not doing their job. I think that's the fear. The police are, of course, working towards that. But nonetheless, there is that issue I think everything is confidential. Everything is confidential. So I think with them giving access to especially researchers like myself, we do a lot of research.
Okay.
If we are given access to it, there can be so many other things we can come up with. You know, one of the research which I wanted to do was when it's the rainy season in Malaysia, what are crime rates like that time?
Why would you be interested in that particular?
Because I wanted to see, do home breaking still happen during that period of time?
Okay.
And I asked for data. I said, can I get access to? They've got a crime mapping system. I said, can I get access to that? I will connect it to a system which we've built. And we want to do the AI test will decipher the whole thing within a few minutes. No, we cannot give you access to that. But they have been kind enough to give us access to other things nonetheless.
Yeah,
but,
so I can understand the PDRM's reticence, right?
Yes.
I can understand that they don't want information falling into the wrong hands.
Yes.
So how do you walk that line then? How do you walk the line between convincing them that what you want to do is for the greater good versus respecting the fact that there is privacy issues?
Yeah, I think one thing which is important is, of course, they have to do the background check. I was in the States recently and they took me for a ride along. I sat in the police car, they took me around.
Which city was this, do you mind me asking?
I was in Minnesota.
Okay.
So they took me around, you know, when every time there was a call, we were at the scene. I asked for the same thing in Malaysia many, many times. I was rejected every time. But it gave me very good insight to how their police system works. They took me through their whole balai, showed me every department.
So what did you learn?
So many things, you know, the processing methods, how they do. But one thing I've learned, they are really paranoid about a lot of things. That's why every time they go out, they've got a vest on. In comparison to us, I think, again, crime is very different in our countries.
Yes.
But nonetheless, I just wrote an email. I just said, this is who I am. I'm coming over here for holiday. Can you guys take me around? Yeah, no problem. Come over. We'll show you around.
Okay.
And a lot of detail. But also moving forward to also, I think, gain the confidence of the public. One thing which needs to be implemented, and I think a lot of cities are moving towards it, is the safe and smart cities.
Okay.
Okay. But we are moving more towards smart instead of safe.
Oh, wait, we do have a safe city initiative.
We do.
Yeah.
We've got the Jabatan Perancangan Bandar dan Desa. They've got a safe city initiative. But I've worked with them here and there. The knowledge on, there's something called crime prevention through environmental design, which basically talks about the architecture design, the landscape design is what actually reduces crime, not so much CCTV. I have to make this clear, CCTV does not prevent crime. I've sat down with a lot of criminals. CCTV does not prevent crime.
Is it even a deterrent in any way?
No, it's not. What it does help with is that when you take this evidence to court, it helps catch a criminal. It helps, you know, prosecute the guy. But it's not a deterrent to crime. A dog is a way better deterrent than CCTV. So when we move towards the Safe City Initiative, the implementation of CPTD is crucial. Singapore has very good implementation on it. It's one of the
perhaps
only Southeast Asian.
You can break that down, CPTD.
Crime prevention through environmental design.
Yes.
So that's what we talk about, architecture design. And the field of it is actually still very small. In fact, there are only 15 people worldwide, not nationwide, worldwide, which are qualified or certified to do this. I've been fortunate to be one of those 15. And when we move on to other countries, the other countries have been a bit more welcoming to this idea.
Could you give us some concrete examples of what those changes would look like in a city?
Okay. The first and most important thing would be lighting.
Okay.
Lighting plays a big factor. Lighting helps reduce the fear of crime to a large extent. It's the same thing as that area probably does not have any crime, but because it's dark, there are overgrown bushes, you know, you're scared to walk in it. But with proper lighting, it's good. One issue we see in every almost every town in Malaysia is this. They put nice proper lights, but because of the lack of understanding of CPTED and also the fusion of landscaping, they plant a tree right next to that lamppost. What happens is that it blocks the light.
Right. At some point, it's overgrown.
Yes.
And
so those are the kind of things which CPTED looks into, crime prevention through environmental design.
And any other aspects of besides lighting?
Yep. Walkways, sidewalks, the width of it, how it's built. Why is it built in a certain way? Is it better to use shrubs or bollards or
a railing,
you know. So which one is better? And everything which has to be implemented has to be properly studied first, because you have to look at the demographics of the area. You have to look at the movement. You have to look at the legitimate users of those areas. So all this comes into play. I'll give a very good example. In PJ, the one-way loop. Let's take for the one in front of near Tunai Sonaran Hospital.
Yes. So that's Jalan Utara,
Jalan
right?
Jalan Utara.
Yes.
Nicely built. You've got nice big walkways. What happens all the time, you'll see cars parked on the walkway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So lack of implementation, you know, because...
Lack of enforcement.
Enforcement is one part of it. But again, the design of it allows these cars to park on top. This is where CPD comes in play. The design of everything is meant to prevent this sort of things. Of course, it doesn't seem like a big thing, or a car parking on a walkway, but nonetheless, it's a car on a walkway. And this also would lead to later on, and I've seen this many times, I take the road very often, motorcycles going on their walkway.
Yes.
What happens then is that snatch theft is bound to happen at some point of time.
Right.
So these are the kind of things that needs to be looked into.
And how easy would it be to implement that in a city like PJ, for example?
It has to start usually from the architecture stage. That would be the best. It can be implemented, but of course now since everything is already built, it does cost quite a bit. You know, you need to sit down, relook at designs, analyze everything from scratch, and you want to break something down and build it up again. It costs quite a bit. So I understand why, but nonetheless, this is crucial.
Okay, well, let's move on to a method that perhaps is relatively low in cost, social media. How effective a tool is that in crime prevention? Or is it perhaps even contributing to rising crime rates?
Well, both. Well, of course, one, it creates that awareness. People are aware, this is happening, that's happening. Okay, I should be a bit careful. It's not good in the sense sometimes it creates unnecessary panic, because there's a lot of fake news which travels around.
Yes.
A lot of fake news. In fact, we became victims of that. When you talk about people using information online for malicious activities, we posted a video some time ago to educate people on a certain crime technique. But there was a message behind it, and we did not watermark our video.
Okay.
That was the mistake we made. So someone took it, edited the thing, posted it online and said, this is a new crime technique which is happening. And we had posted that video 2 years ago, and suddenly it's popping up. My face is there. And
so he was a criminal.
I was just going to say, as the perpetrators of the crime.
It was acted out, but nonetheless, it looked very good. It was very well executed. And people started commenting, and you know, I get messages from friends, hey, what did you do?
Why have you your work 180 degrees?
Yeah. But you could see a lot of hate coming up from there. It would be like, tengok budak India tu rompak orang, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, we had to write to Facebook to ask them to remove all these posts.
Right.
So that's how sometimes it can be used to, you know, for malicious activities. A lot of people steal data online. You know, the PDPAS has come in effect, but still it's not enforced to
right,
say.
Right.
So you've got all this with relation to social media.
Okay, well, let's leave the issue of enforcement for a while. I want to be able to drill down to two areas where crime is highest in Malaysia, Wilayah Persekutuan and Selangor. So in the course of your work, Shamir, what are some of the most prevalent criminal activities in these two states, and which areas are naughtiest?
Okay, so I think the biggest perception is that KL has the highest crime rates. It is not. Selangor has the highest crime rates. Selangor alone contributes to 24% of total crime in Malaysia. 24%. KL only contributes 13%.
Okay.
That sounds somewhat in line with the ratio of population.
Yes, of course. Selangor has a much bigger land size as well. And then Johor is next. They contribute about 11%.
And the state with lowest crime?
You've got places like Perlis and all, smaller population.
Okay. All right.
So Jas is actually very low. But when you look at Selangor alone, Selangor contributes to about 15%. And when we're talking about violent crime, 15% of it is this kesamon,
right?
Muggings and all.
Yes.
So that's 15% in Selangor itself. Motorcycle theft is the highest. They contribute to 30% of crime in Selangor. But we can break it down even more. Let's break it down even more.
Yes, please.
So I know we have YB Rajiv here. Some bad news.
Something tells me PJ is going to be coming into the spotlight.
PJ is the highest. PJ is the highest contributor to crime in the whole of Selangor. By we contribute to about 15.7% of crime in Selangor, followed by Kajang, and then Gomba. Surprisingly. Kajang is about 11. Gombak comes first, 11.6. Kajang is about 11.2. I know this perception that Klang is a big contributor to crime. It probably is actually, but what the statistics have, what the index has shown is that they've broken Klang to two parts: Klang Utara, Klang Selatan.
Okay.
So when you split it up, they contribute about 9% and 4% each.
So these are absolute numbers and not ratio to the population.
No. These are just absolute numbers. Yes. So this is what crime is like in Selangor.
Okay, so to your knowledge, let's stick to Selangor, right?
Yep.
Since it has got such a high prevalence, what are some of the state projects that have been kicked off, or perhaps even federal projects that have been kicked off to tackle crime? Because if the numbers are that high, the government must be doing something to address it.
Yes. Okay. So one of the things which I've done myself personally, of course, I've worked on CPTED projects locally and overseas, and I've worked with PJ, MPPJ on a CPTED project, and we did a pilot project for reducing motorcycle theft in a specific area. And we were quite successful.
Would you be able to divulge the area?
Maybe not.
Okay,
I don't know.
Worries.
But in that specific area, we were able to reduce motorcycle theft by 32%.
Would you be able to tell us the method that was used?
Okay, so what we did was, so we were hired specifically to do this. We used CPTED methods. We went down, we did a thorough analysis. We sat down with motorcycle thieves and we asked them, how do you steal these bikes? They showed us, they taught us the mechanics behind it. And we designed a motorcycle locking dock to be implemented in that area. So we just came up with the design. That's what we were called in for. We did not do the installation, nothing as far as that.
But you're talking about cutting the theft of motorcycle crime by a third.
But in that specific area, that pilot project area. So that's what we did. Again, this just shows how effective CPTED can be if it is properly implemented.
Right.
Yeah. So, but again, it's not as easy as it seems. Jabatan Perancangan Bandar actually has a whole booklet on CPTED, Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. But it's very basic. That's elementary. And a lot of developers take this. The biggest problem is this. They take that, they implement it, and always copy and paste. Every development that we go to is the same. We've been judges on property awards, and we've seen every time someone comes in, I can say, look, I know who the security guy behind this is. I know this project is by which company, because it's always the same. But what people fail to realize, just because it worked in one area, it does not mean it's going to work in the next area.
Right.
Demographics is different. Crime is different. Who is conducting crime is different. For example, I'll show you when we did a quick analysis, and we did it with MPSJ. MPSJ has recently engaged us as well.
Okay.
And we were doing a quick analysis. And one thing we realized was car theft was prevalent in certain areas. But again, that's just people saying car theft is prevalent. We did a deep analysis and we realized, okay, car theft is prevalent in that area for cars which are not parked in the parking lot, which are parked on the roadside.
Okay.
And that could be various factors because, you know, maybe lighting in that area is bad. It's closer to the road, so they just smash, grab and they go. But those which are parked in the proper public areas were okay.
All right.
The tepi jalan ones kept getting broken into. So those are the kind of things that we were able to see. So we just needed to look into strategies then. Okay, do we increase lighting? Do we increase more humps in the area? What do we put in the area? Maybe mirrors, so that kind of thing. Or do we increase the number of parking lots? Those are the kind of things that comes into CPTED. Because you have to understand, car parks are a big issue. Car theft is a big issue. Highest number of stolen cars in Malaysia are Protons. And when we look into the number of car parks, it's never enough. a developer sell a three-bedroom apartment but only give you two car parks.
Sometimes less.
Sometimes less. Everyone has a car now. Every year, we have about 600,000 cars which are being sold.
Yes.
You know, Honda is close to 900,000 cars being sold. You know, so these are the numbers that people don't look at and they think it's enough.
Okay. Mm. Well, we've talked about the design aspect of crime prevention. I want to go into the police force and community in a little bit, but we're going to have to take another short break at this point. I'm speaking to Rajiv Rishakaran, Assembly Person for Bukit Gasing, and Shami Rajadure, a crime prevention specialist, about the proposed crime prevention index under the newly launched Shared Perspective Vision 2030. If you have any questions on this topic, please do feel free to tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or call in at 0377-332900. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Rajiv Rishakaran, Assembly Person for Bukit Gasing, is here for his monthly show. And in the studio with us is Shamir Rajadure, a crime prevention specialist. The topic of the day is crime, what to do about it, and later on how we can try and avoid being victims of it. To join the conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or call in at 03-7733-2900. Okay. So, Shamir, we've been going through how cities could possibly incorporate design into ways to kind of reduce crime, right?
Yeah.
So we've talked about design. I want to now look at the effectiveness of a police campaign to tackle crime. When we say that a police ops is successful, are we really just talking about a reduction in numbers? Is that it?
Well, that would ideally be that, you know, when we don't see any complaints and all. Let's take an example. Let's go back to PJ, since we were talking about PJ.
Okay.
First thing, we have to understand that though PJ was one of the highest, but nonetheless, a lot of initiatives have been taken by MPPJ.
Okay.
Over the years, we have seen a reduction in crime. Like, for example, we shared motorcycle theft was reduced in certain areas, 32%. So PJ has done an amazing job in reducing crime. Every year they put in some sort of new initiative. And one of the things which the police does is that they work very closely with a lot of communities in PJ.
Mm.
So, but then you do have certain areas which have higher crime compared to certain areas which you just have hardly any. For example, certain areas in, let's take for example, Bukit Gasing, YB's area, you have probably low crime rates in certain areas, which are very good. I live in a neighborhood which has next to none. It's not a gated and guarded neighborhood. YB is actually the adult of my area.
Right.
We have next to none in that area. Effective, very effective. Other parts you do, but I think I do have to give credit to some of the work which PJ has done over the years. Because I don't want it to seem people are going to get scared. Oh, you know, PJ, high crime rate, don't move to PJ. No, nothing of that sort.
I think cities are big, you know, in general.
Yes.
Every city, if you break down the crime by city, cities are all in the hundreds of thousands, if not they hit a million people. And within this, then you will have pockets of places which are less safe and pockets
of safer
that are safe.
Yep.
And so sometimes there is the macro statistics that, that policymakers need to keep an eye on,
right.
the police needs to keep an eye on. And also there's also the micro statistics. Like, you know, what happens in a particular housing taman.
Okay, so I'd like to actually hear your thoughts, Shamir, on this idea of community policing, because I know that's been something that's been bandied around quite a bit. In your view, does it really work, or really should we be shifting the spotlight and telling the government, no, forget the community policing, you really need to be strengthening the police force?
Actually, community policing is extremely effective.
Okay.
Like you said, you know how they say it takes a village to raise a kid?
Yes.
Same thing, it takes a village to keep the village safe. the importance of community policing is that it gives the residents the sense of confidence to be the police in that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they see something, they will say something because they know, look, the police are here to help. The police are here to help. I have to give credit to my neighborhood. It's very effective. Again, we've worked very closely with YB Rajiv, with the police force in the area, Petaling Jaya. One phone call, they come. You know, and they're there within less than a minute, too. You know, the call time is about usually 8 minutes response time.
Mm-hmm.
They're there with less than that. So they've helped tackle a lot of crime in this area. When there's a lot of police presence, it creates a sense of security for everyone. Right. You know, I can go out and get play. Don't worry, the police is there. Right. They'll be there to take care of. So community policing does help. But if that area has high crime, mm-hmm. a lot of factors need to be taken into consideration. Who are conducting these crimes? So okay. the police needs to do an analysis. When it comes to usual crime, criminology states there are three main elements. You've got a motivated offender, a suitable target, and an absence of a capable guardian. Only when these three elements are together, mm-hmm. that's when crime cannot happen.
Okay.
Okay. If the it can happen. That means there's an absence of a capable guardian, there's a suitable target, and there's a motivated offender. Right. Only then crime can happen. So the concept of a capable guardian is the police. If they are there, it helps deter crime. So we have to look at, just say an area, high crime rate. Who are conducting this crime? Why? Is it due to the economic factor? Or is it due to gangs? You know, let's just take a very good example. Why, you know, sometimes when we look at stats, again, pure stats, why the minority in this country, the second largest contributors to crime in Malaysia?
Right.
You know, is it due to lack of equal opportunity? Is it due to movies? Is it due to drugs? Is it due to alcohol? So these are things which really need to be, we really need to go into it with, in detail.
On that note, we actually had a WhatsApp coming in, you know, saying, you know, please share PDRM data. Machine learning can help provide insights. Data can be anonymized. And I suppose what he's saying here is exactly what you've been saying. Yes. You've been asking for the data. it's just that you're not having access to
yes.
it.
Yes, they've given us data on Excel sheets. That's why, you know, when YB Rajiv asked, you know, do we know exactly where in PJ this is happening? I don't. The police does. I don't. So when I say PJ has crime, high crime rates, it's only because I see it as a whole.
Correct.
I've not been able to break it down to which area and all. Like what's been said throughout the session, certain areas in PJ is safe.
Okay, so we're actually fast running out of time. But before we wrap up, can I please just get, because of the wide, varied experience you have, right? Yeah. In your experience and knowledge and your travels, have you seen best practices in other countries that have shown solid results in crime prevention? You mentioned a visit to America.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I've been throughout Southeast Asia a little bit and also other countries. The one thing which I realize other countries have is that they've given a lot of access to the public to come up. Like earlier, what the person on WhatsApp said, you know, AI learning can help with a lot of things.
Yes.
CPTED, Crime Prevention Trend Environmental Design, is a must.
Okay.
Like I said, look at Singapore. According to Global Peace Index, they are one of the safest in Southeast Asia, safest country in Southeast Asia. If you want to reduce corruption, pay the police well. I don't think our police officers
Fair
are paid enough. That's
enough.
Why, you know, you have officers taking bribes and all. I think they really need to be paid well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think education is key to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about underage rape. Education is key. A lot of people become, just to highlight that a bit further, a lot of people become victims of underage rape because they do not know they're being victimized as well.
Okay.
So education is key. Equal opportunity is key. And I think one thing which is very important, just to wrap up, we need to teach people the value of a life. You know, we keep teaching people that it's wrong to hurt someone or kill someone. But what we really need to do is to teach them the value of that person's life.
So how do you do that?
That's where I guess, I'm not going to say religion doesn't play a factor, but
values.
Values is what's very important. You just have to teach a person, look, it's not that you're hurting the person, but every life matters.
That it does. That it does. Quickly, before we wrap up, your area of expertise is crime prevention and personal safety.
Yes.
Perhaps you could just share with us a couple of really quick tips on how we could make our neighbourhoods and even maybe our personal surroundings a little bit more safer so that, you know, we can, I'm not saying that we can't be a victim of crime because that's almost impossible, but to mitigate.
I think community building is key. First of all, get to know your neighbours, get into any form of you know, meaningful conversation. The reason why I say meaningful conversation, not just conversation, if not just ideal gossip. When you get into meaningful conversation, you build genuine friendships, you take care of the neighborhood you're in. And when the neighbors come together, any form of community building activity helps reduce crime. For example, this evening, YB Rajiv and myself and all, we are going to be at a neighborhood Merdeka celebration.
Okay.
You know, everybody comes together. It's a potluck celebration. There's this theory in criminology called the broken window theory, which states that if you see an area with a lot of broken windows, it just shows no one cares.
Right.
So that's where crime breeds. And with community building, it reduces that. So community building is key to reducing crime in neighborhood. And that's where the police comes in, ADUN comes in, all these people come in.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Shamir.
Thank you very much.
Have fun at the potluck, the both of you. Did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to share on this topic, Rajiv?
Final thoughts in a topic like this is always challenging because on one hand, you want to say be vigilant, you know, because you can never be too safe. But if you talk about crime coming down in general, crime still exists and you want to stay safe. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to strike too much fear.
No, of course not.
But if I could share two maybe of anecdotal indicators that we can see in the Klang Valley. One is complaints from the general public to elected reps like myself has actually dropped with regards to crime compared to 5 years and 10 years ago.
Okay. So
I take that positively.
Good.
All right. Because complaints in general are still booming, but with the ratio of complaints that are crime related, we're talking about a snatch thief and stuff like that, has dropped. What it has not dropped or what is increasing is the scams. But if you're talking about the house break-ins, the snatch thieves, the car thefts, those have reduced a lot. And the gated and guarded schemes. Now, 10 years ago, gated and guarded schemes were booming. You see new ones being opened everywhere.
Right.
But gated and guarded schemes have slowed down. Some have actually dismantled. And you hardly see new ones coming up anymore. That also goes to reflect the larger sense that people are starting to feel a little bit safer.
Sure.
In their actions. Not just their WhatsApp messages or their coffee shop talk, but in their physical actions. I think goes to show. So I think if you look around areas of PJ, you don't see new, hardly you see new schemes being set up.
Sure.
10 years ago, every other month, a different area you see the boom gates coming up. So the boom gate installers have lost their business.
Okay, well, that's certainly a lot of food for thought. Thank you both for being here today. I've been speaking to Rajiv Rishakaran, assembly person for Bukit Gasing, and Shamir Rajaduri, a crime prevention specialist, about crime indices and creating safer neighbourhoods. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.